is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads. Wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and they truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Also, make sure to check out the new Dr. Dish Home Machine, which is perfect for these crazy times when gyms and schools are closed. Visit drdishbasketball.com for details. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is former NBA player CJ Watson, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, Hoopheads, we all hate ankle sprains, and they happen way too often. Ankle injuries are the number one sports-related injury. Arise is trying to change that. With the iFast, your athletes get preventative protection and full mobility. Athletes no longer need to wear bulky braces that limit performance and give mediocre protection. Anyone playing sports should be using these products. Keep your athletes in the game. Don't wait for them to get hurt to take action. Visit www.arise.com, spelled A-R-Y-S-E, and use the code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off the future of performance. That's A-R-Y-S-E.com with promo code HOOPHEADS to get 20% off. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Linsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are jumping on to talk.
We don't have anything to talk about.
The NBA crazy season. Holy cow. We have crammed in 3 months of NBA transactions, drafts, roster moves, predictions. All this stuff is crammed into what normally is a 3 month period into like 2 weeks. So
I kind of want to do this every year, Mike. This is exciting.
It is fun. It's definitely, there's a lot to process, but yet in a way it doesn't drag it out. It's like, let's just get over the hand holding and sitting around and figuring out who's going to do what and taking 10 days to decide. And let's just decide it all in 10 hours instead of 10 days at a time. So I'm all for that. Where are we starting? Draft?
Draft. Let's start with a draft. Sure. Why not?
Okay. All right. So let's just go through the top 10 really quickly. Opinions, thoughts on guys that you think made good choices and players we think that are going to work out. And let's just buzz through this in 5 or 10 minutes at the most.
Well, I think, Anthony and I were, those top three, we knew that those were going to be the top three. We didn't necessarily know the order. We drafted them in the correct order, right, Mike? You and I?
We did.
You and
yes,
I? Okay. So we drafted the top three in the correct order. The LaMelo was interesting. I hope somehow the Michael Jordan versus LeVar battle one-on-one happens. Some people have been joking about. I hope that happens. I don't think it would, but I'm pretty sure MJ would still destroy him. I think obviously we'll talk about the other Hornets transaction and what that means. You know, I think it's kind of dual layered. The LaMelo thing, pair it with the Gordon Hayward thing. I think there's a reason for that. I think it's to show confidence in LaMelo that this is a place that you want to be because we're going to spend the money.
And you bring in a pro. I think that has a lot to do with it. You bring in a guy that has obviously had a lot of adversity in the last 3 years, but he's a guy who...
Do you think they consulted Terry Rozier at all on this? Like, because Terry Rozier played with him for 2 years? Or do you think that he didn't have any say at all?
I would say Terry Rozier had very little to do with it. But you never know. I mean, they might have had a conversation, but I doubt that conversation had much impact on.
Okay,
what
I was
they
just curious.
Did.
I thought that's the first. That's ironically the first thing I thought of. I was like, "Hey, Terry Rozier and Gordon Hayward reunited." I don't necessarily know that's a great thing, but you know, they played. Was it one or two seasons? I can't even remember.
Well, last year was Rozier's first season in Charlotte, so they would have played two together.
Yeah. Well, really, Hayward didn't play one of those seasons because he broke his foot. But
within the first. Yeah. 5 minutes of him playing. All right, so, here's how we do this. Let's look at, just tell me, which one of these three guys, because I think if you look at it, they went to the places where most people thought they were going to go. Which of these guys, let's rank them in terms of where we think they're going to be in their career. Which guy is going to have the best career, the second best career, the third best career out of these three?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I think James Wiseman, and here's why. There's only one reason. Because he's going to Steve Kerr as his coach. And I think Steve Kerr is the best coach of the three. And he's going to put him through the ringer and put him in a spot to be successful. Where I don't trust. Who's the Timberwolves coach? I don't even know. Who's the Timberwolves coach, Mike?
The Timberwolves coach is who? That's a good question.
There you
is
go.
It still? No, wait. It's still.
Is that Saunders' kid?
Still Flip Saunders' son, right? I believe.
Okay. Well, there you go. I mean, he has no pedigree. Who's the Hornets coach?
What do you mean he has no pedigree? He's got a great pedigree. He's Flip Saunders' son.
What has he done, Mike? What has he done?
Listen. What has anybody done? He's Flip Saunders' son. The Cavs have Bernie Bickerstaff's son. I don't know what to tell you. If you have a dad who's in the NBA, you got a much better chance
of
making
it
to the NBA.
Who's the Hornets coach, Mike? I don't know.
The Hornets coach is Barrejo.
Okay. Of those three people,
James Barrejo.
Of those three, who do you trust to be successful? I think Wiseman has the highest ceiling out of the three of them.
You think he has the highest ceiling this year, or do you think in his career that he has the best career when you look back 20 years from now?
I think he has the highest ceiling this year. I don't know. Who knows? It's a complete crapshoot who's going to be more successful in 20 years.
This is an opinion podcast, man.
Okay,
you can't
I'm going to go with
out.
Wiseman because he's at the Warriors. And
okay,
Steve
so Wiseman's one. All right, who's two?
LaMelo.
Okay, and so you have the least confidence in the number one pick, Anthony Edwards.
Well, listen, the last time that Anthony went number one, it didn't work out so good. So
no, it didn't work out too well. Did not work out well. Okay, so honestly, like, I'm not sure any of these guys, I'm not sure any of them are going to have great careers. They each have red flags that worry me. I think Edwards, there was a lot of talk, both pre-draft and post-draft, that people aren't sure necessarily about his motor and decision-making. I really don't like it when I hear that too much. Wiseman, just the fact that he plays center makes me think that the ceiling of his career is maybe lower than these other two guys just in terms of potential. Now, I will say going to the Warriors would have been the best situation for any of these three guys, for sure. I don't think there's any doubt. So as far as quickly getting up to speed of what he can be, I think Wiseman probably benefits the most from where he went. And then LaMelo, to me, is a guy who I think he could be really, really good, or he could end up being really, really bad. And so I'm going to rank him this way. I'm going to say Wiseman 1, Anthony Edwards 2, and LaMelo 3.
Can I tell you why I think LaMelo's 2 and Anthony Edwards is not 2?
Yes.
Because I think the Hornets have a chance to make the playoffs this year and getting the playoff experience. I think LaMelo, here you go, Mike. I'm going out on a limb here, and it's not very far of a limb. I think LaMelo has potential, is going to be better than his brother. And his brother's not great. His brother's good. He's solid. I think LaMelo's going to be better. I think
LaMelo's not better than his brother.
You don't think LaMelo's going to be better than Lonzo?
I'm saying if he's not better than Lonzo, then that's a massive screw-up by the Hornets.
Well, Lonzo went too, so...
Right, but I'm saying if you know what you know about Lonzo Ball right now, and you were to put Lonzo Ball in this draft, where does he go?
I mean...
Is he a first-round pick?
Oh, come on now. Wait a second.
I'm asking, is he a first-round pick?
He's a first-round pick, Mike.
If you already know that Lonzo is what he is he a first-round pick?
He's a first-round pick. He's a first-round pick.
Okay. Where? He's not a lottery pick.
Oh, no, he's not a lottery pick. I think he goes... Let's look. I think he goes...
He maybe creeps into the back end of the first round. Maybe.
I think he's drafted somewhere in the 17 to 21 range, Mike.
Okay. I mean, that's fair.
I think one of those teams is going to take a flyer on him.
Yeah, but you already know what he is at this point. I don't know. Anyway, whatever. I think that the worry... Okay, here's another question for you. If we're thinking about Charlotte making the playoffs, which I agree, if LaMelo is good, they could potentially make the playoffs because there is one slot available in the East that I think a lot of teams can make a claim for
Cavs?
That we'll talk about over the course of the night. Well, if Isaac Okoro is the best player in the draft, maybe. We'll have to see.
He might be the best defensive player in the draft, Mike.
He might be. I don't know.
His offensive game is a little rough, though.
That's okay. That's all right. We got offensive players that we can put around him.
We don't have any.
We got Darius Garland's floater to carry us through when things get shaky.
The Cavs did not follow my strategy of we don't play defense, just draft someone that we know is going to play on offense and just try to outscore their opponents. They didn't follow my philosophy, Mike.
Well, I'm glad they didn't, because you can't really build a basketball team that's going to win anything that way. All right, here's a question for you. You said Charlotte's on their way to possibly competing for a playoff spot, which I think I agree with. But just looking at the teams, forget about which conference they play in. Which team is better? Is Minnesota better or is Charlotte better?
I mean, I think you're flipping a coin there. Personally, the problem is Charlotte's going to have an easier schedule, so it's going to appear that they're better than Minnesota.
Yeah, I think you can make a case that Minnesota is better.
The other question you have to ask is which Karl Anthony Towns is showing up, because he is very inconsistent. He has to be. When you think of Mike, when you think of all-star caliber players, the best player on their team, because we would have to agree that he's the best player on their team, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is there an all-star caliber player, number one player on a team? And we're not talking like team that the Cavs, whose best player isn't that. I mean, Kevin Love's probably their best player, but he's not an all-star right now, right? Would you agree with that statement? He's not an all-star.
He's not an all-star at this
point. So an all-star caliber player, would you say, where would you rank Karl Anthony Towns among the rest of the league? I would say he is the bottom. He is the if you were doing a all-star team, he is like the last player on the all-star team.
Well, what's funny is that I forget now how many years ago that was when they did a GM survey of who you'd want to start your team with, and Towns was ranked number one. I think that was like 3 or 4 years ago.
Listen,
and
any survey that doesn't have LeBron or Giannis as number one.
But I think that was at that time, that was like players under 24 or 25 or whatever.
Well, still Giannis.
Right, but that was coming off of Towns averaging like in the last half of that season. I think that was either his rookie year or his second year, where the second half of the season he was averaging like 29, 14, and 4 or something like that. I mean, it was ridiculous.
Okay.
And
all right.
People thought that he was going to evolve into – and again, offensively, the guy's phenomenal. It's just I think the issue with him has been defensively he gives you nothing and he's a net negative. And – if you're building your team around a guy, you want that guy to be a leader. And it doesn't seem like from the reports that have come out of Minnesota and just things around the league that are being said that he's that guy. And so if you're building around him as your number one player, it puts you in a tough spot when you're only playing one end of the floor. And especially in today's league, you just can't have one-dimensional players. The more one-dimensional players you have on your team, the worse off you are. And it doesn't matter if they're one-dimensional offensively or they're one-dimensional defensively, it's still a problem. So I think in a vacuum, I think Minnesota's roster is probably better. I think if you flip Minnesota into the East, they'd be right there competing for that eighth playoff spot. In the West, I would say unless Edwards turns out to be way, way better than anybody thinks, and unless D'Angelo Russell and Karl Anthony Towns commit to at least being mediocre on defense, which is a lot of ifs, then I don't really think that Minnesota is going to contend realistically for any playoff spot in the West. Whereas I think Charlotte, if things break right, if that's probably the wrong way to say it with Gordon Hayward, if things break right, but if if things work out for the Hornets, potentially they could be competing for that eighth spot with some other teams that we'll talk about as we go forward. All right, that's enough about the
top. Could you say they're going to snap their streak of not making the playoffs?
You could say that.
That might not be the best way to write either, right?
No, anyway, that might not go over well.
Anyways, all right. So of the other top 10 picks, I mean, what are your takeaways? I think, like, I was interested that Patrick Williams jumped so much because he wasn't ranked as high. I feel like Obi Toppin, I feel bad for him because I feel like he's probably in the worst position out of everyone because he went to the Knicks and we know how much of a dumpster fire the Knicks is.
But he's from New York, and I think he's happy to go to the Knicks.
Probably, but I just don't – I mean
– I know what you mean. The basketball situation there is not great.
I was a big fan of him. I know he's 20 – was he 22? So he's older. And, you know, his potential is there, but I'm concerned that the Knicks are just going to light any potential he has on fire because they are the Knicks.
I wouldn't want to be stuck playing with RJ Barrett as my main ball handler if I'm a guy who depends on somebody else to get me the ball. That's how I would feel about that.
Yeah, for sure.
To me, the Patrick Williams one is the one that that's a reach. And a guy who doesn't start for his college team, and I know Florida State has a team and that's filled with athletes and guys at different positions, and they had Vassell who got drafted, and they've got some other pros on the roster. But if you're the fourth pick in the NBA draft, I feel pretty strongly that you should probably be good enough to start for your college team, Mike, no matter what that college team is.
Hey, I remember a player that didn't start for their college team that the Cavs drafted at number 3, right?
That's right.
Deion Waiters.
That's right. That's right. That didn't work out too well either.
Hey, he likes his gummies, though. Don't worry.
He's good. Well, and Marvin Williams got drafted ahead of Chris Paul. So let's put it this way. If the Patrick Williams pick is a reach and it turns out not to be good, then let's hope that the next pick after that turns out to be a good one. And so I think both of us came out of the draft feeling like Isaac Okoro was a good pick for the Cavs at number 5. I guess the other guy I would have considered probably would have been Okongwu, but
I don't know. Broken toe would have scared me away. Yeah,
I'd rather have the wing. I'd rather have the wing for sure.
I mean, he's going to be able to guard people, and you know, and
this team needs that.
Yeah, because I mean, you look at your players. I mean, now that they've lost Tristan, who's their best defender on their team? Like Delly, who they just signed. Like theoretically, is Delly the best defender? I'm being serious when I ask that question, Mike.
Okay,
who is the best defender?
Let me look at the Cavs roster, and I'll tell you who the best defender is. I'm just going through. I'm seeing a lot of no's.
Andre Drummond, maybe technically.
I'm seeing a lot of no's. Yeah, I would say right now. Oh my gosh. Let's see.
It's got to be Drummond. He averages a few blocks a game. You know,
I guess if you count rebounding as defense, maybe. I would have to say I would maybe vote for Larry Nance Jr.
Oh my God.
And look, that is the very definition here of slim pickings on Cavs defenders, because there really isn't.
Who's Lamar Stevens? I never heard of that guy before.
He's the guy they signed out of Penn State to the 2-way contract right after the draft, undrafted guy. Well,
Hopefully he was nowhere near the Penn State football coach. What's his name? He's terrible. He should be fired because they're terrible. Hopefully he didn't hang out with him. Franklin.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, all right, so basically what we're saying is
We underscored the fact that Kevin DePorter Jr. knows how to defend himself, Mike.
Okay, there you go. Let's leave that alone. Let's leave that alone. All right, I'm sticking with Larry Nance Jr. as my defensive stopper right now. So,
all right. Well, I'm going to say Dellavedova is the best defender on the team, and if that's the truth, that's not a good sign.
If either one of those is the truth, it's a little rough. So, anyway, welcome to Cleveland, Isaac Okoro. Hopefully,
JaVale McGee.
Yeah, hopefully you can guard the whole team, Okoro. All right, rest of the first round. I thought kind of went the way expected. I think Avdija maybe dropped a little bit. I think Washington was pretty happy to get him at number 9. And Killian Hayes went to Detroit, which everybody thought they were going to take a point guard. I think a lot of people thought they were going to take Halliburton. And instead, Hayes went to that.
Halliburton's stock dropped. And here's my problem. I don't know why any of these guys' stocks really raised and dropped, because we didn't see anything. Like, I mean, I know they had interviews with people,
The Zoom interviews.
Did we have a Zoom? Did we see workouts? Did we see workouts from any of these guys, really? I mean, I'm assuming teams had to have seen workouts from them, right?
Like, I don't know what the rule. I think they could only, like, I think they were able to bring in players for one-on-one workouts where it was just the player, whereas typically I think they sometimes bring in 2, 3, or 4 prospects so they can compete against one another. But my understanding was that they only were able to bring guys in for individual Yijian Lan, chairman of the board's workouts. So I think that's a little bit
tougher. That's a name we haven't heard for a while. I like it.
That is. But So I don't know really what they saw to rise and fall. But again, part of it comes down to what you always hear talked about before the draft is everybody's board is different. So one team might have had somebody ranked number 4 and somebody else might have had somebody ranked number 16. And it just kind of depends on where these guys fall on teams' boards. And Detroit obviously had Killian Hayes rated ahead of Halliburton. And then maybe you look at the next couple picks and they're like, look, we don't need a backcourt player. We want somebody in the front court. So then you get a run of power forwards and forwards, and Halliburton falls to Sacramento, which if the reports on Halliburton are true, and I cannot have claimed to have watched any Iowa State basketball or seen really much of Halliburton, but just going off of what the draft experts seem to say, that this guy's a high IQ player, a guy who can fit right in, a guy who plays defense. He fits really well in that you put him with De'Aaron Fox, and then if they can rehabilitate Buddy Hield in Sacramento, or maybe they end up trading him for something else. But it sounds like Halliburton and Fox, who signed the max extension in the last week, is that they're going to be a good pairing. And it seems like Sacramento got pretty good reviews for their entire draft and the people that they picked. And they have a new front office there. Vlade is finally out of there. So maybe, just maybe, if Sacramento can get some luck with Marvin Bagley, maybe they're going to start to turn things in a positive direction. But who knows? Who knows? Who knows?
All right. Anything else on the draft, Mike?
All right, nope, I think we're done.
I think, okay.
Yep.
Do you know where to hit the backboard for the highest percentage shots? Do you know when using the backboard is better than taking a direct shot? Be certain that you are taking the highest percentage shots by training with the Shoticle. The Shoticle mounts on your backboard to give you the location of the highest percentage shots. Train with the Shoticle and you will score more. Basketball is a data-driven game, so don't ignore the data and the facts. We worry about the data so you can focus on shooting. Visit Shoticle.com now and start scoring more.
So now, the chaos that is free agency. I think what's crazy about this whole thing, Mike, is we have 28 days, Mike. 28 days. We'll be playing an NBA game. Theoretically, right? The 23rd, right? Was that the date?
22nd.
22nd. Oh, my God. So, yeah, 27 days then. Oh, man. This is crazy.
What's really weird is it honestly feels like the bubble just ended. It feels like the Lakers just won the title. And I know it's been a little bit of time now, but it feels like
it's only been a month and a half, though, when you think about it, right?
Yeah, it feels like it's been next to nothing. I mean, it feels like even shorter than that since we watched games. And when games start up again, it's definitely going to feel like, man, we didn't even really have an offseason. We've crammed a lot of stuff into this offseason for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So, all right, so what we're going to do is we're going to kind of go through this team by team by division, and we might talk about a team. We might just straight up ignore a team if nothing really happened with that team, and we'll go. So we're going to start with the Atlantic Division. We're going to start with the Boston Celtics. Key losses, Gordon Hayward would be the key loss in the key game. Oh, and they lost Cantor, I guess. I wouldn't say that he's a key, but he's a loss. And they gained Tristan Thompson, and they signed Jason Tatum to a huge contract. Are the Boston Celtics better or worse? I'm going to say that they're slightly worse, but not substantial enough to make them not a contender in the East. That's my place.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's very little difference in what they are today versus what they were 6 weeks ago. You can argue that if you have a healthy Gordon Hayward all the time, that you're worse. Clearly, if you lose Hayward, even at his less than his best, he's still a guy who's out there that knows how to play, that can facilitate. He's a good passer. He's not nearly the player he was when he first came to Boston before the injury. He's just more hesitant, doesn't go to the basket as hard, looks tentative, kind of at all times. But that being said, he's still a player that's out there that can defend multiple positions. He's still a guy that keeps the ball moving and is a good passer. He's still a guy who can shoot it. He's still a guy that you want on your team. So you subtract that out and you don't bring back anything significant to fill that spot. And I think you can say that they're slightly worse. But again, Gordon Hayward's availability during his time that he had signed that contract with Boston was hit or miss. just to put it kindly. So I don't think they really miss him that much because they were so used to playing without him. And locking up Tatum on the max extension is clearly something that is a positive for the Celtics. So I'd say maybe a slight fall, but as you said, not enough to knock them out of being one of the teams that's going to contend for the Eastern Conference Championship next year.
All right, moving on to the Nets. The big contract to our friend of the pod, son of the friend of our pod, Joe Harris. When I saw those numbers for Joe Harris, my eyes got big, Mike. I like him as a player. I was impressed. Congrats to Joe. That's all I'm going to say on that. And then I guess the other key addition was Landry Shamet, right? That's the other person I would say the Nets.
Correct. So this roster, as it's constructed, I think it all hinges on Durant and the health of his Achilles tendon and what he looks like coming back. If you get 90% of peak Kevin Durant from before his injury and this team has good chemistry, which again is debatable and is questionable, but if you do, just on paper, if you have a healthy Durant, this team looks like it should be a title contender because they're versatile. They have guys that they can bring in that play defense across positions. You have multiple guys that can create their own shot. You have multiple guys who can shoot the ball. It's a very, very versatile roster that you can do a lot of different things with. You can have a strong bench unit where whether LeVert ends up being the starter or LeVert ends up playing sort of, they stagger his minutes with Kyrie so that LeVert gets to have the ball in his hands and be a creator. There's just a lot of different things you can do with this roster. So I'm not still 100% convinced that all the things that need to go right are going to go right. And they obviously have an interesting situation on their bench with Nash being a rookie head coach and with D'Antoni by his side, so, and Amari Stoudemire. So there's a lot of moving parts.
The band
parts.
Is back together, Mike.
The band is back together. There's a lot of moving parts in order for this team to become a true contender. I think there's a decent chance that it does, but I think there's probably an equal chance that, I don't want to say it blows up, but that it doesn't work as well as they would anticipate. There's kind of a history of the first year of these teams coming together that it doesn't mesh quite as easily as they think. So I think Brooklyn, if Durant is healthy, I think Brooklyn finishes. They're definitely a top four seed if Durant and Kyrie.
I'm saying it right now, Mike. I'm ready to say it. Okay. They're the two seed.
Okay, that's fair.
I think they have some. They just have quality across the board, and I mean when you think about it, okay. So Durant. They've got Kyrie. They got Dinwiddie. They've got Joe Harris. They have people to play offense when one of the two is off the floor. It's not just going to be the one man show, right?
I agree. They're deep. They're deep.
If they're
all
healthy, they're deep. That's all I think.
Correct. I mean, and they're versatile. I mean, I think you have some guys that can play defense. You have some offensive players. They're good. This team.
I think Shamet is a really good pickup for them. I really agree.
I agree.
I think it is. Because you know they're going to have games where Kyrie and KD aren't playing, okay? Because of all the back-to-backs they're going to have, there's definitely some games that they're going to sit out. And they have enough depth that I think that they can score even if those two are out, you know, if they pick those games wisely. All right.
My only question with them, again, is this a team that looks good on paper and on the floor it just doesn't look
the same? They're the paper champions? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I think they could definitely be the paper champions, but I'm not sure whether or not when you put it on the court, whether or not it can mesh. The potential is certainly there. I mean, this team, potentially, if they were running on all cylinders, I mean, this team is a title-contending team if Durant's 90 to 95% of what he was before. I don't think there's any doubt. So it's just a matter of, again, what does it look like out on the floor?
All right, moving to the Knicks. I don't really have much to say. They added Elfrid Payton and Austin Rivers. Your takeaways on that. Anything, Mike?
The only thing you could say about the Knicks is that it appears that everything that they've done this year, they've only signed one-year deals, so they're at least leaving their options open for next summer to be able to potentially lure free agents to New York. So if Leon Rose and the new management that's in there can prove themselves over the course of this season to not shoot themselves in the foot and they can keep James Dolan.
I was going to say that's their problem is they got to get James Dolan out of control.
Well, if you can at least – yeah, if you can at least keep James Dolan back in a back room somewhere and not let him out and talk to the media, just, you know, help, try to get people to forget that he's actually part of your franchise, then maybe there's an opportunity at some point that they really can sign a marquee free agent. But the first thing that they've done well is all these guys that they've signed this year now have been signed to one-year deals where they're all going to come off the books next year. And then you're still going to have the cap space that you need in order to be able to pursue a big-time free agent. I still don't know if I'm a free agent. I look at this roster of what they're going to have on under contract next year. I'm not sure that anything that's there right now pushes me over the top to say, hey, I want to go and play for the Knicks unless I really want to play in New York City. So,
yep. All right. So now we're moving to the Sixers. Okay, so the Sixers added a few people. The Sixers added... they added Seth Curry, they added Danny Green, they added Dwight Howard. Mike, I gotta ask you, do you know who Ryan Brokoff is?
Isn't that Tom Brokoff's son?
I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. Okay, so I was looking at the roster.
Do you know who Tom Brokaw is?
He was a news reporter. I know who Tom Brokaw is.
Okay, good.
He was right. He's on ABC, I believe. Right? ABC?
I was gonna say NBC, but I couldn't.
Oh, NBC, you're right, NBC. Okay, so, but Ryan Brokoff, this guy is a 30-year-old. He's only played two seasons in the NBA. I don't know what he did before. He played two seasons in the NBA where he's averaged 4.2 points per game. But I've never heard of this guy before. But when I looked at who the Sixers picked up, it said Ryan Brokoff was picked up. And I was like, who is this guy? I have no clue. But he's played for two seasons, but he's 30. So I don't know what he was doing before then, Mike. I don't know if he was working.
Must have been playing in Europe somewhere. Who knows?
Possibly. Who but knows? Anyways, he played at Valparaiso. That's all I know. All right. I don't really have anything to say. The Sixers, obviously, it's an interesting situation with Doc being the coach. But I don't have anything to say. I think the Sixers are, as Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid coexist, that's where the Sixers go.
Yeah, it's going to be up to Doc and Daryl Morey to figure out whether or not that pairing is going to make sense. I do like picking up Seth Curry and Danny Green. I think those two guys, clearly the more shooters you can put around Embiid and Simmons, the better off you're going to be. I know that a lot of the draft experts felt like the Philly got two pretty good picks. They picked up Tyrese Maxey from Kentucky towards the back half of the first round, who a lot of people thought might potentially go higher, and he was – really a highly rated recruit coming into Kentucky. And then Isaiah Joe from Arkansas, who I believe they took in the second round, is another guy that a lot of people think on that roster could potentially make sense. Although the odds of a second round pick having any kind of real impact on a contending team, which Philly clearly is, I'm not sure how impactful a second round draft pick is going to be. But nonetheless, I think the biggest addition to Philly is Daryl Morey and Doc Rivers, and you figure out what you're going to do around the margins of these two guys. I think they give it through the trade deadline, and I could see at that point if something's going wrong, and who knows, we'll talk about Houston in a little bit, if both Harden and Westbrook are still there and that situation has gone south and the Philly situation has gone south, maybe there becomes a time where you're going to swap either Embiid or Simmons out for James Harden, which, again, I don't know that I would do if I was Philly, but it is what it is. But yeah, Philly, I think, look, you picked them to make the finals last year. So did a lot of other people. And we know that they have talent. We know that Embiid and Simmons are probably two of the top 15 players in the league. And usually that's a pretty good indicator that you're a title contender. For whatever reason, they just haven't been able to put it all together. Maybe it was Brett Brown's coaching. Maybe it was these other pieces around the periphery. And so changing those guys out and changing out the coach, maybe that unlocks something that Brett Brown couldn't previously unlock. But this team still has the chance to be good. But just like I said with the Nets, you have to do more than just talk about being good. You actually got to go out and do it on the floor. And both Embiid and Simmons have to stay healthy, which they really haven't been able to do successfully for long stretches with both of them being healthy out on the floor.
All right. So Raptors, they didn't really add anyone. They signed Fred VanVleet to a major contract. Bet on yourself. You got Aaron Baines, and then they lost Ibaka, and they lost Marc Gasol. I think the Raptors are worse.
Yes, the Raptors are definitely worse. I think everything with Toronto is set up for next summer with the idea that Masai Ujiri can somehow convince Giannis to come play.
Listen,
in
there's
Toronto
too many teams playing this game.
Or,
like
Tampa, or Tampa, where they're going to play their games
in Tampa
this year.
I guess that's the other thing. So, okay. Chicago Bulls. I don't have anything to say about the Chicago Bulls. Do you have anything to say about the Chicago Bulls?
I think the Chicago Bulls, we already talked about in the draft, I think picking Patrick Williams is going to be something that in another year or two, they're going to really regret having drafted him and passed on some of the guys that were behind him. I'm not sure what to make of the Bulls. I don't know what they're doing. There's not really anything there that is super interesting to me. They didn't add anything. So, yeah, let's move on.
All right. The Cavaliers add JaVale McGee, signed Matthew Dellavedova, lost Tristan Thompson. I feel like there's one other thing I'm missing. Well, what, did they do anything else, Mike? They signed some guy from New York that I never heard of before. What's his name? Drummond picked up his player option, which we thought was going to happen. What's the other? I thought they picked up a guy from the Knicks, but it's not listed here. But I'm pretty sure I read that he was signing with us, according to Woj. But anyways, I mean, I don't know. The Cavs probably didn't get any better. They probably didn't get any worse. I'm saying it right now, Mike. They're going to compete. They're going to compete for the 8th seed in the playoffs. Because when you go back and you look at since we picked up Drummond and that stretch that we had for Drummond and Love on the floor. Now, granted, we had Thompson on the floor as well. They were one of the better records in the East during that time. So I'm going to say right now they're going to compete. I didn't say they're going to have the 8th seed, but I don't think they're going to be a rollover. That's what I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't think they'll be as bad as they've been the last couple of years. I think the key for the Cavs to be competitive in the Eastern Conference is going to be the continued development of Colin Sexton and whether he can elevate himself up to becoming a borderline all-star player, and then whether or not Darius Garland can live up to his draft status from last year. Clearly, he had, I would have to say, a disappointing rookie year. I don't think he showed nearly the playmaking or the shooting that people thought he was going to coming out of Vanderbilt as a college player, although he only played 5 games there, so I'm not sure how much stock you can put in any of that. But Garland has to be better. Kevin Porter's got to stay out of trouble off the floor because I think you and I both feel like he might, if he could get his head on straight, he might have the most potential of any of those guys just because of his size and his varied skill level. And then we have no idea what Okoro is going to be like as a pro, but the profile of Isaac Okoro fits this team. If he can defend, then maybe this team has an opportunity to contend if those guards continue to improve and get better. So,
all right, Detroit Pistons. I have no clue what they're doing. They are definitely crazy.
They fall into our huh category.
Oh, come on, Mike. We know what we wanted to write it as.
A WT, and then we'll just kind of leave the last letter alone.
They get an F for their grading on what they're doing this offseason.
They do. They do. I don't know. I mean, it doesn't really make any sense. Signing Mason Plumlee for $25 million is pretty much all you had to tell me, and I have a pretty good indication that they don't really know what they're doing. And boy, that's just – it's a mess of a roster, and I'm not sure what you're trying to accomplish with the signings of Plumlee and the Jeremy – look, I like Jeremy Grant, but the amount of money that they're paying him is ridiculous. You still have Blake Griffin, who I guess – is supposedly healthy and looking good, but I'm not sure that Blake's a guy.
So I don't know. I'm assuming you didn't listen to the Simmons podcast that he put out at like 6 o'clock tonight, right?
I did not listen to that yet.
So Jackie McMullen threw out an idea to trade Blake Griffin to the Wizards and to get back. I don't know who was it that she said, and I was like, that actually makes a lot of sense for both teams, and I kind of liked it.
John Wall.
I don't know that John Wall was included in the deal. There was some other players included in the deal. Maybe
Blake makes $35 million though. There'd have to be a lot of salary there in order to match that.
Yeah, I know. But the trade that she mentioned on it made a lot of sense. I'm unfortunately blanking on what it was.
Well, nonetheless, Detroit, I have no idea what they're doing. Let's move on.
Indiana, they were long to be rumored in the Gordon Hayward sweepstakes, but that wasn't meant to be. I don't really think they did anything. Did they do anything? Is their roster basically the same?
Nothing happened. I think they're...
drafted Cassius Stanley. That's it. Okay. So I got nothing to say on Indiana. Milwaukee. Obviously, since our last podcast, the Bogdanovich thing fell apart. They did end up, making the trade for Jrue Holiday, but that's really the only thing they picked up. They picked up Augustine, but I wouldn't really say that's really anything. And they signed Bobby Portis. So I know you were high on Milwaukee last week with the Bogdanovich trade. Are you still high on Milwaukee, even though they didn't get Bogdanovich?
I mean, you can't be as high. I mean, there's no way you can be as high on the Bucks without Bogdanovich. I mean, he was clearly a key to what they're going to be able to do. Jrue Holiday is still a good pickup. He's still a huge upgrade over Bledsoe. I think they're better than they were 2 months ago for sure. And if you forget about the Bogdanovich debacle, then I think you still say, hey, Milwaukee's better than they were last year. They're more diverse. I think they're probably better defensively. They can do more offensively. It's just that Bogdanovich signing is still sitting out there in the back of your mind. You say, man, if they could have gotten him, they would have really had, I mean, at least the four guys they could have put out on the floor really, really solid. And then whether you put Brook Lopez out there or somebody else. I guess the plus side of it is you keep DiVincenzo and maybe he continues to develop and he takes another step forward. They re-sign Pat Connaughton. Maybe Connaughton somehow gets better and improves. Look, with Giannis, you're always going to be a contender. You're always going to have an opportunity to compete. Do they have enough to get through the rest of the Eastern Conference? Obviously, I thought they were going to win the title last year, so I'm not going to say no, they don't. But the regular season at this point, again, becomes meaningless for this team because everything that they're going to be judged on is going to be in the postseason. So we can go from December until June when the regular season ends or May, whenever the regular season is over, and none of that's going to matter. It's not going to matter what their record is. It's not going to matter what their point differential is. The only thing that's going to matter is what do they look like come playoff time. And I think they're better positioned to succeed in the playoffs, but I don't know that they've taken a monumental leap. Whereas I think with Bogdanovich, and again, not so much that he's that great of a player, but he just would have been one more piece where he's maybe the third or fourth best guy on your roster. Now you've really got something. And I think that depth of playmaking would have really, really helped them. And they're going to need somebody to step up at least somewhat in that role. DiVincenzo is obviously the guy who probably most likely fits that bill, but is he going to get there? Nobody knows. I think this team's better, but I don't know that they took the huge leap forward that I would have felt like with the Bogdanovich trade.
All right. Going from where Bogdanovich was supposedly going to where Bogdanovich actually went, the Atlanta Hawks. Now, the Hawks were active, way more active than I thought they were going to be. So they got Bogdanovich. They paid a lot of money to Rajon Rondo, and they paid money to Danilo Gallinari. I will say this. I don't think the Hawks are going to be world beaters, but they made some moves that I think has to put them in the conversation to not be competing for the 8th seed. I think they could compete for like the 6th seed. I don't know what your thought is. Obviously, all the things have to fall into place, and Trae Young has to continue to develop a defensive game, and the Hawks need to play better, and maybe DeAndre Hunter takes another step forward, because I think you and I were both pretty down on him, but I don't think he was terrible last year. I think he was serviceable. So, you know, I think the Hawks can be in discussion for the 6th seed. I don't want to say that they're going to be the 6th seed, but they have the pieces if they all put them together. What do you think, Mike?
See, I don't know, because I look at the teams that are above them, and I say, who's going to take a step back in order for one of those teams at the bottom to be able to advance up, because one of those seeds last year was Brooklyn. Brooklyn is clearly, no matter whether what they're doing works or doesn't work, Brooklyn is not going to drop from the seventh seed. They're not going to be lower than the seventh seed. I think the only team that you can make an argument above the Hawks that got worse is the Raptors. And I guess we said the Pacers probably stayed the same. But theoretically, if Oladipo comes back healthy, the Pacers could be better by adding what the last time we saw Oladipo healthy, he was, what, third team All-NBA. So if you get that Victor Oladipo back, which I'm not sure anybody in the league is convinced that that guy is still there, but you get some version of a healthy Oladipo and Indiana potentially could be better. So
I said compete. I didn't say they were going to get the sixth seed. I want to be clear here.
So I think if you look at the contenders for the A seed, I think Atlanta has probably put themselves pretty firmly into that conversation, because the guys that they added are all guys that have had success in the league, that can contribute to win, that have contributed to winning teams, not necessarily championship teams, but certainly winning teams. And Rondo's contributed to championship teams, although you don't know what you're getting from Rondo in the regular season. But yeah, I like what Atlanta did in terms of the short term. I'm not sure about what they have going long term. And you think about Trae Young's trajectory and sort of the timeline that he's on. And if you're thinking about the timeline he's on, then your guys are Collins and Herder and DeAndre Hunter. Those are the guys that kind of match up with his age range. And I'm not sure that any of those guys are the types of players that long-term are going to get you anywhere besides the middle of the pack in the Eastern Conference. So short-term, I think Atlanta's better. They're clearly not going to be at the very bottom of the Eastern Conference. They're clearly, I would think, going to compete for a playoff spot. But 2, 3, 4 years down the road, when it's time for Trae Young to sign his rookie extension, or even look out further than that, when it's time for him to decide after 7 years or whatever whether or not he's going to come back to Atlanta. We've seen this act before, where teams that sort of mortgage their future and sign bad contracts, I'm not sure whether or not this is the right move long term.
Makes a lot of sense. I understand what you're saying. Sorry. Next up, we've got...
How's that food treating you, man?
There's some pretzels, man. Sorry.
Oh, my God. You got to get some water going or something, man.
All right, I'll drink some water. Hold on.
You got to take care of that, man.
That's why I muted myself. I was being conscientious. All right. The next pick, the next discussion is the Charlotte Hornets. I have to say, I'm glad that Michael Jordan has $120 million laying around to pay Gordon Hayward. I think it's an obscene amount of money to pay him. I think, listen, that's what you've got to do to attract people to your market, because no one's going to come to Charlotte otherwise. It's got to give LaMelo some confidence that they're going to spend some money and try to improve the team. I mean, but I don't know. His injury history, I don't know. Can you truly say that this is going to be money well spent? I don't know. And obviously time will tell. But, I mean, the team got better for sure. For sure better. But I guess the question is, how much better did they get? I don't know the answer to that question. They signed they extended Biombo, right? They extended Biombo, Bismack?
It could be.
I believe they extended Biombo. They signed Hayward. They drafted LaMelo. So that's pretty much all they did. So are they... They're what I would classify, as we discussed, a pretender.
Yeah, I mean, they're better. I think the problem with the Gordon Hayward contract is I just don't know if the guy's healthy. And I don't know if he can stay healthy at this point in his career. If he can, then yeah, they overpaid. But as you said, if you're going to get somebody to Charlotte, you're going to have to overpay. And I know that on Zach Lowe's last pod, he talked about how Celtics and I think Indiana were talking about paying him in the range of $100 to $105 million over the course of 4 years. So Maybe Charlotte overpays him by 15 or 20 million, which again, 15 or 20 million in NBA terms, maybe doesn't seem like that much. So if you get a healthy Gordon Hayward for the next 4 years and he's able to be out on the floor, yeah, you overpaid him, but at least you're getting value. I just, from my standpoint, I would not have wanted to pay a guy that has that kind of injury history, that kind of money. Typically, those kinds of contracts don't end up working out very well for the teams that sign guys to those types of contracts. They just don't work very well because inevitably the guy ends up getting hurt again and just doesn't provide the value that that contract warrants. The production from that type of contract usually doesn't get lived up to by a player who has that kind of injury history. So if LaMelo's good and Gordon Hayward can stay healthy, then this team can compete for that bottom rung of the Eastern Conference playoffs. If either of those things go badly, and I think only one of them has to go badly, then I think this team is right back at the bottom of the Eastern Conference next year.
Yep. All right, Miami Heat, they added Avery Bradley. They got a one-year deal out of Dragic. Is that it? They got one-year deal. Was there a player option for a second year?
Player option. Both him and Myers Leonard signed one-on-ones. So with the I think they both signed with a team option because Miami wanted to be able to free up that cap space again for Giannis. So everything that they did this year in free agency was done with the idea that you're preserving cap space for next year to be able to sign Giannis. And then still you have the Bam Adebayo extension that's out there where I'm sure they're talking to him behind the scenes where they don't want to offer him the extension because then his cap number goes up and that could preclude them from signing Giannis, whereas they could wait until after they sign Giannis and then offer Bam the extension. So who knows how that goes on in terms of Bam's feelings
it's going to come down to if Giannis signs the deal for the extension before the deadline, because if Giannis signs the extension, then I think Bam will get the extension right then.
Correct. I agree. So Miami, I would say, is status quo from where they were last year. I don't think they've gotten markedly better or markedly worse. They lost Jay Crowder, who was a key piece of what they did in the playoffs, but you added Mo Harkless, and I think Jay Crowder's replaceable, let's put it that way. So I expect Miami to be in a similar position to what they were last year. They'll be in that 3-4 seed, 3-4-5, somewhere in there, and they'll be a dangerous playoff team for sure.
All right, so the Magic, I don't really have much to say. They added Dwayne Bacon and James Ennis. I have nothing to say.
Yeah, move on.
Washington Wizards, once again, I don't really have much to say about the Wizards. They added Raul Neto. I don't even know who that is.
He was with the Sixers. He's like a backup guard. And they signed Bertans.
Got Robin Lopez. But Bertans was on their team already, right? So they really...
So there wasn't a whole lot that went on with the Wizards.
Obviously, I think things to come for the Wizards. Yeah, all right.
We'll see.
Do we want to move to the West now, Mike? Does that sound good?
Yeah, let's do it quick. Yep, let's buzz all through. Right. I know
Warriors, obviously, Klay Thompson injured. So that's sad news. I think... So they made moves to get Kelly Oubre. They added Bran Wanamaker. They drafted James Wiseman. And they traded JaVale Mc... Oh, no, wait, no, he was not on them. What was he? He was on the Lakers. What am I thinking? He used to be on their team. But I don't know. The Warriors didn't really change too much. Obviously, they added those two players. But I don't know. I mean...
They went from a title contender, kind of on the outside of title contention, to a team that has no chance to win a title without Klay. The roster's not good enough. Steph's not going to be able to carry this team to an NBA title, and Draymond is starting to age a little bit. So I still expect this team to be good, but I think they end up being towards the back half of the playoff picture, which. With the possibility that if a guy or two gets hurt, even not even one of their key guys, not even Steph or Draymond, but if one of these other guys that's going to play major minutes for them gets hurt, that they could miss the playoffs altogether in the crowded Western Conference. They're certainly not title contenders anymore.
All right, next up, we got the Clippers. The text of the night or the tweet of the night that I received from you is, the extension to Marcus Morris solidifies the fact that the Clippers are not going to win an NBA championship. I completely agree. They're big move.
They signed him for 4 years.
Listen, it's going to be comical when Kawhi and Paul George are gone, and the only thing they're left with, the remnant that they're left with, is Marcus Morris. So
Marcus Morris is 31 years old. He signed up to a 4-year deal. That is insane. That to me just solidified, like I said in my text, there is no way the Clippers are winning a title with Marcus Morris.
Well, so here's their roster changes. They basically traded Luke Kennard for Montrezl Harrell. And I know Harrell was unplayable in some situations, but he's better than Luke Kennard. Are you kidding me?
The question is Luke Kennard better than Landry Shamet?
Oh, yeah, they lost Shamet too. The answer is no. The answer's no.
Okay, that's the bet that they made, because essentially in that trade it was Shamet went out and Kennard came in. So obviously the Clippers think that Kennard is better.
Yeah, I think they're crazy.
Which I don't know that I mean, Kennard might be a better
fit.
He might be a better ball handler, and you know, he might be a slightly better all around player. I'm not sure that he's better defensively, although neither him nor Shamet, I think, are really super strong defensive players. Kennard probably isn't quite as good of a shooter as Shamet. He might be a slightly better, more versatile offensive player. I don't know. We just saw the Clippers implode, and I know Kawhi's done it on the big stage multiple times, so you can't question him, but I've seen Paul George fail too many times in the clutch to believe that if he's my second best player, I can win a title. So I am not a Clippers believer. I think that their championship window closed last year when they lost a 3-1 lead against Denver. I think this team, as it's currently constructed, is finished as a title contender. Now, they're still going to win a lot of games, and they'll probably be a top 4 seed in the West, but I look at them as pretenders.
All right. The crosstown rivals, the champions, the Los Angeles Lakers, somehow got better. I mean, there's no doubt. They got better. Okay, yeah, they picked up Jordan Bell. Woohoo. But they picked up Marc Gasol. They picked up Montrezl Harrell. They picked up Wesley Matthews. They picked up Dennis Schroeder. There is no doubt in my mind that the Los Angeles Lakers got 100% better. I think they have upgrades. And I think this is a great strategy. Rob Pelinka, congratulations. You've locked up GM of the year already, and the season hasn't even started yet, because here's what's going to happen. Some of those guys, oh, they picked up McKinney too. They got Alphonso McKinney, you know, our boy, you know, he's gone for the Cavs. Here's what's going to happen. They're going to have games that LeBron and AD are going to take off because they're going to try to pace them. They just spent a ton of time in the bubble. It was wearing. They're going to have options now that they can actually sit someone down and they can still score points. You're going to have Dennis Schroeder out there. He didn't last that long in the bubble. He could play more minutes. You know, Harrell, he didn't hardly play in the bubble because he was unplayable against certain teams. And Marc Gasol, all these guys can score. I'm telling you right now, Mike, I'm saying it right now. The Los Angeles Lakers are the NBA Finals. I'm putting it down right now. The season hasn't even started. I'm putting them down, penciling them in. Right now, writing it down. Los Angeles Lakers, NBA Finals. I'm writing it down, and I'm calling it on 11/25/2020. Your response?
Okay, I would say yes, I agree. The Lakers have gotten a lot better. I think those four guys that they brought in, you can easily make an argument that any of those four guys could be in their five-man finishing lineup. And maybe they won't. Obviously, they're not all going to be, because LeBron and AD are going to be part of that finishing lineup. But you can make a case, depending upon what the needs are or who the matchups are, that any of those guys could be in your final closing five in an NBA Finals game.
The Lakers could legitimately field an all-star team almost.
I agree. So the caveat here is the only real opponent for the Lakers is Father Time. And
oh, God, here he goes again.
This is it. This is it. At some point, right? At some point, LeBron is going to begin to lose the battle to Father Time. And look, I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't know when it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
Mike, I wish I had the time to go through all the NBA episodes and every time you talk about Father Time with LeBron. Yes, we know it's going to happen. But did you see him play a month and a half ago, Mike?
I did. Look, I'm not arguing with you. Look, I'm not arguing against it. I'm telling you, I think the Lakers have got to be the prohibitive favorites to win the title. I don't think there's any doubt about that. The only thing that derails them is the decline of LeBron or an injury.
But Mike, this protects against that because now he doesn't have to. And I know LeBron's not going to take date like
right.
Say, but you're taking easy. But you could say, okay, LeBron, you're going to play 30 minutes tonight. You're not going to play more than 30 minutes, and you're going to play 30 minutes. And if you play 36 minutes, LeBron, here's the deal. You don't have to go hard in the 36 minutes because we have five people or six people that can score. Whereas before, like last year, how many people did you really trust to score for the Lakers?
Look, I get it. I'm not arguing any of these points. These are all great points. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. I'm saying the only thing that derails this team is if LeBron somehow, some way declines way more rapidly than anything in his past would suggest, or he somehow suffers an injury.
You got your quote for the headliner right there. Your quote should be, I agree with you. That should be all we say.
Okay.
Because that doesn't happen very often. So we should put that in there, Mike.
All right. You should. I agree with you. The Lakers are a prohibitive favorite. Barring something unforeseen happening with LeBron, this team is going to win a second straight title.
And then are we starting to have that discussion, Mike? Are you ready to have that discussion yet?
No, that discussion is sailed, man. It's never.
Oh, come on. Let's have it a little bit.
No,
oh, we forgot the Lakers also extended KCP again. Right? They signed him.
Yes, again. They did sign KCP. Although I did hear rumors that Anthony Davis was looking elsewhere, so
no, come on. If he goes somewhere else, dude, oh my God.
I heard he wanted to go and play with Gordon Hayward and play for Michael Jordan with the Charlotte Hornets. That's what I heard.
Yeah, right. Okay. So then the Suns, obviously the big addition is Chris Paul.
We already talked about that last week.
And that was really the only move they made. So we'll move on. Sacramento Kings, I don't really think I have much to say about them. They lost Bogdanovich. Anything? They added they did add someone, though. Who did they add? Who am I forgetting? I feel like
I like the fact that, again, I think their draft adding Halliburton was good. They added Alex Len,
whoopie
backup
doo.
Center.
Whoopie-doo on that.
Yeah, whoopie-doo.
He was a number one pick, right? Or he was like a top.
He was number five. He was fifth. He was a number five pick out of Maryland. I don't know whenever he came out in the draft. So he's 27. So, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago, somewhere in there.
Did he come out in the Deion Waiters draft? Was he in the Deion Waiters draft?
I have no idea. I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well, I don't know. Whatever.
Sacramento. The key to Sacramento is going to be what can they get out of Marvin Bagley. If you can get Marvin Bagley to live up to some degree his draft status and keep him healthy, then this team can be decent. I think De'Aaron Fox is going to continue to get better. If Halliburton's as good as people think, if you can get Buddy Hield kind of under control and have him want to be there, or at least convince him that he's got to play hard and compete, then all right, then that backcourt is going to be pretty solid. And you still have, despite his flaws, you still have Harrison Barnes. And the key is Bagley. If Bagley can give you something comparable to what you would expect out of the number two pick in the draft and what people thought his potential was coming out of Duke, then this team could be pretty decent. If you don't get anything out of Bagley like you haven't for the first 2 years of his career, then this team's DOA and they're going to be at the bottom of the Western Conference again.
Yep. All right, so now we're moving on to the – we're going to the Mavericks, and the big thing with the Mavericks is they lost Seth Curry, and they added Trey Burke. So, I mean, it's kind of – I think Seth Curry's a little bit better than Trey Burke, but it's basically –
well, Trey Burke was on their roster, right? I think they just re-signed him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
The guy they added was Josh Richardson in the trade.
So
they picked up Richardson in exchange for – Seth Curry. They're also going to get Dwight Powell back from the torn Achilles that he had. at some point during the season.
Yeah, but how far is he going to fall? Because, I mean, once again, we go to this whole Achilles thing. It's the most devastating injury, I think. You know, people say ACL, but, like, Dwight Powell lived above the rim. And what is that going to look like? I don't know. I mean,
he's definitely not going to be as good as he was, for sure. I mean,
for sure. So, all right.
I think Dallas is kind of like Miami, though. They've done everything. They've set up everything with the idea that should Giannis become available, they want
to
be a landing spot.
Dude, I want Giannis to go to the Dallas. Of all teams, Team International.
Well, Luka, Giannis, and if they can make it work with Luka, Giannis, and KP, oh, my God. Would that be fantastic? I would.
I mean,
love
I don't want
that.
I do not want Giannis to leave Milwaukee. I hope he stays and works to bring a title to Milwaukee. But if he was going to leave, there's no question that my favorite landing spot for him would be Dallas to go play with
Luka
and Porzingis.
I'm going
to
tell you right now, NBA, Dallas Mavericks, Giannis Antetokounmpo. I would instantly buy a Giannis Dallas jersey if that happens. I would instantly buy it.
All right, there you go. There you go. The other thing about Dallas that I heard mentioned was the fact that you have Tim Hardaway, who I believe is an expiring contract this year, and he has $20 million in salary. So there's a potential that if somebody becomes available at the trade deadline, you have a nice big salary that you could potentially trade for a star player. You could package Hardaway and a couple other mediocre contracts and get to star money to bring somebody else in if that becomes available. So who knows? That's also there if Giannis signs the extension, and so that is no longer out there. Now you have that Hardaway expiring contract, maybe to be able to attract, to be able to make a trade for somebody else who becomes available. Yep. So,
okay. All right. Next up, the Houston Rockets, a.k.a. Mike's favorite team from the West. We have the Houston Rockets, coached by Stephen Silas now. That poor man, I don't even know what I would do if I was him. You got James Harden asking out. You got Russell Westbrook asking out. You traded away Covington to the Blazers, which we'll get to in a little bit. You got the Rockets just basically self-destructing. I think the Houston's going to hold on to Harden because they're not going to get a good enough offer, and they're going to see how things go, and they're going to wait, and it's going to be more better because what's going to happen is it's just going to become an absolute crap show. I'm using the word crap because I'm trying to keep it clean here. It's going to be a disaster because Harden's obviously not going to want to be there, and he's going to want to be somewhere else, but they're going to hold on to him because they're like, dude, you still have X amount of years. I don't know how many years he still has in a contract, two or three years.
I think he has 2 years left.
2 years under contract. We're not trading you for peanuts on the dollar. We want you to be here, so we're not going to trade you. Stop whining. Stop complaining and deal with it. We brought Westbrook in because of you. You're the reason we brought Westbrook in. No one else. You made us trade Chris Paul. So I think this is just poetic justice to what it is our opinions on James Harden. I hope he stays in Houston, and I hope it's just a disaster, and I can't wait to watch it.
Well, I think it has a very, very good chance of being a disaster. I think if both Westbrook and Harden are unhappy, that doesn't bode well for what potentially you're going to do in Houston. They lost, as you said, Austin Rivers. They lost Covington. They did bring in Christian Wood, who was maybe one of the free agents that people thought would be a coveted free agent that teams wanted. 6'10 guy who can play all over the floor. Clearly, had they been looking at last year's team where they had doubled down on small ball, I'm not sure Wood would have been a fit, but with the new regime, maybe they're looking to play a little bit differently. The attitudes of Westbrook and Harden, if they both stay there, are going to be the key to whether or not this team is successful. If Harden is bought in and playing hard, then this team's still going to be good because he's just so good as a regular season player that they're going to be able to score. And so I would expect that if they're bought in, that this team's still going to compete for one of those playoff spots in the back half of the Western Conference. If the chemistry and the attitudes go in a different direction, this team could easily fall down to the bottom of the West, which would probably grease the exits for Harden and Westbrook. So, look, I'm just like you. I'll be interested in watching what this team does and just seeing where they end up. And I'm always, again, I don't want to say gleeful, but you know, I'm not a big believer, as I've said many, many times, in James Harden. He's a great regular season player. He's a great offensive player. He's tremendously skilled. But if he's my best player, I don't trust him to win playoff games, and I don't trust him to win titles. And so good luck, Houston, with whatever you're going to do with him. If I were them, I'd want to ship him out even for pennies on the dollar, because I just don't think I'm ever going to win a title with him.
Yep. All right. Memphis did nothing, so I have nothing to say about Memphis. Anything?
Memphis, key to them is the continued development of Morant and Brandon Clark and Jaren Jackson Jr., and that's really where they're going to hang their hat.
All right. New Orleans Pelicans, they picked up Steven Adams. They picked up Eric Bledsoe. They lost Jrue Holiday. I don't know if they got better. I don't know if they really got worse. I mean, I think Steven Adams is a solid player for them. I would have thought Steven Adams was older than 27, but apparently he's only 27 years old. He at least kind of puts a defensive player in there, because obviously they didn't really have that. I mean, Jackson Hayes was a rookie last year, so he needs a lot of work. But I think Steven Adams is good, and Eric Bledsoe is a good veteran. I know he's not going to perform well in the playoffs, but I think he's at least serviceable to an extent. That I know you're not a huge fan, but I think he's serviceable.
It doesn't matter for New Orleans, because they're not competing for a title. So
yep, I agree. Bledsoe. I think they're developing their keys this year. Let's develop Zion. Let's continue to develop Ingram. Let's continue to develop the chemistry and build for the future. That's ultimately what I think New Orleans is trying to do this year. I don't think they're not going in thinking they're winning a title this year. I agree with you.
Well, just like Oklahoma City, they have a huge war chest of draft assets that they can either use to make the actual picks, or that they can use in future deals to be able to get somebody in here that fits the timeline of Brandon Ingram and Zion Williamson. And the other thing is, they drafted Kyra Lewis, I'm not even sure how you say it, but the 6'3 guard out of Alabama, who was considered to be probably the fastest player in the draft. And I heard a lot of good things about him both before and after New Orleans drafted him, that he could be a really nice pickup for them and end up being a guy who long-term fits with what they're trying to do. So New Orleans is, I think, trying to win, but they're also have one eye on the development and all the draft capital that they have, trying to build around Zion. And of course, the key to this team is, and the key to their long-term future, is Zion has to stay healthy. So whatever you have to do, whatever that looks like, nutritionist, exercise physiologist, whatever you have to do to be able to keep this guy healthy, you got to do everything in power to do that, because when he's out on the floor, already in whatever he played, 18 games, he was a difference maker. And clearly they have some other good pieces around him as young players, and they're going to continue to be able to add that going forward. So I would anticipate that their team building strategy is just going to continue to build that chest of assets, so that when either they make those picks in the draft, or they look for a way to be able to parlay that into somebody when they finally feel like Zion and Ingram are ready to contend for a real NBA championship.
I agree. Okay, next up is the San Antonio Spurs. I don't have much to say other than their only free agent acquisition is Tyler Zeller.
Okay, well, that kind of speaks for itself. San Antonio is in this weird position of, you know, we don't know really what their next move is, where they're trying to go next. They clearly have some nice young guards in Murray and Lonnie Walker and Derek White, sorry. So those three make up a nice backcourt, young. They each have some different skills that they have, but I'm not sure that this team is going to be ready to get back to the level that they've been anytime soon. Aldridge and DeRozan are still fine players in their own right, but both of them kind of play a style that maybe isn't considered to be analytics and modern basketball friendly, with DeRozan taking a lot of twos. And although Aldridge started shooting a little bit more threes in the last season or two, clearly this team is past its prime and needs some retooling before they're going to be able to compete again.
Yep, I agree. All right, the Nuggets, their big loss is Jeremy Grant. And, you know, they signed Millsap, and who was the other one that was a free agent that they signed? I'm forgetting off the top of my head. Millsap, and they kept someone else. I don't know who. Oh, man.
Monte Morris, maybe?
Maybe, yeah.
no one huge. So I think they're worse. They lost Jeremy Grant, and Jeremy Grant was a key to their team. You know, I know he went to Detroit. I know that he was following the money, but
whew. It's funny that we make fun of the Jeremy Grant signing from Detroit's perspective, and yet it is a big loss for Denver. And I will say, though, when you look at Denver's roster, losing Jeremy Grant hurts because he was a versatile defender. He was a guy who could shoot it. He was long, and he definitely helped them in the playoffs. I think what you're hoping, if you're Denver, is that Michael Porter Jr. takes the next step in his development and becomes a player who is far more talented offensively than Jeremy Grant, and that he starts to be able to figure it out at the defensive end as a 6'10 guy with a long wingspan. Theoretically, he should be able to defend. They also picked up Jamichael Green as a free agent from the Clippers, who can kind of slide between the 4 and the 5 and can also shoot some threes. He's probably not as good as Jeremy Grant, but he's a similar type of player. So their improvement is going to kind of come from within through Michael Porter Jr. And then also don't forget that Will Barton was a starter for most of the season and didn't play at all in the bubble or through the playoffs. And he's only 29 years old, so he's a guy that's going to come back and be able to contribute this year. I think Denver, you're going to count on the continued improvement of Jamal Murray from a consistency standpoint. Jokic probably can continue to get better, still a young guy. I don't think this team is worse. I'd feel a lot better about them if they had re-signed Grant, but losing Grant is not a death blow to this team. I would say at worst, they're the same, because I think that both Jokic and Murray are going to continue to improve and get better. And I think Porter, if he stays healthy, is going to also contribute a lot more than he has in the last 2 years.
All right. Next one, the Minnesota Timberwolves. They are bringing him back, Mike. Ricky Rubio is back with the Timberwolves. My favorite tweet during free agency came from Ricky Rubio. ... What a business. Upside down face emoji. That doesn't necessarily scream, I'm really excited to be back in Minnesota. And then he tweeted, thank you, Phoenix. It was a fun year. You guys have something really good cooking. Gonna miss my dogs. Valley Boys. Surfer boy emoji. I don't know what that is. Thanks to everyone for the support through the ups and downs. Undefeated in the bubble, 8-0. And he didn't say anything about, oh, I'm excited to be back in Minnesota. That doesn't scream to me, oh, I'm really happy to be here.
Well, you hope that Ricky Rubio is going to be a professional. And if he is, which I would guess that that's the route that he's going to take, he's going to be pretty good, I think, for that team, in that he's going to be able to get them. He's a competent NBA point guard. Obviously, his downfall is the fact that he really doesn't shoot the ball at all. And when he does shoot it, he doesn't shoot it well. But he is a guy who is a professional point guard, for lack of a better way of saying it. He's a guy who's going to be able to set up Karl-Anthony Towns. He's going to be able to get a guy that's going to enable D'Angelo Russell to play a little bit off the ball. Hopefully he can help from a professionalism standpoint with Anthony Edwards. I think he's a good pickup for Minnesota. We talked about them a little bit off the top. I think if Minnesota was in the East, they'd definitely be in position to contend for that last spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs. In the West, unless you get a huge change in the defensive effort from Russell and Towns, I think this team is still pretty far on the outside looking in when it comes to the Western Conference playoff picture.
All right, next up, the Oklahoma City Thunder. Obviously, we can talk about the talent on the floor, but the war chest that they have, much like the Pelicans, the war chest that they have collected, Mike, is absolutely ridiculous. They traded Paul away. They traded Schroeder away, right? Schroeder went on was it a sign and trade for Schroeder? Or was it just he went on a free agency?
No, they brought in it was a trade.
Yeah, so they've got a war chest. They now have Al Horford. They now have George Hill. They've got a lot of turnover. But I will say this. Oh, we can't forget they have Admiral Schofield from the Washington Wizards. Don't forget about, listen, anyone that names their kid Admiral, I mean,
look, hold on. Let's just do this. Let's cut to the chase here with Oklahoma City. Let's defer all discussion of Oklahoma City until the 2023 NBA draft when they have 12 of the first 20 picks.
That's true. I mean, that's what they're looking like. I mean, it's listen, I give Sam Presti a lot of credit. He has, for lack of a more appropriate term, he has some cojones on him, and he's willing to go out there and say, you know what? You know, we're not a championship team right now, but what we do have is we have the assets that we can make trades to further our potential in the future. I don't want to say trust the process with them because they're always seem to be forward thinking. And I give Oklahoma City a lot of credit. When you think about a small market team, I mean, we would agree Oklahoma City is a small market team, correct, Mike?
Yeah, they're probably the smallest market in the league.
They have to do these things. And they have arguably, I would say, if you said to me, Mike, of a top potential, a player, and they're under 22 and under, you would say the SGA has got to be a top five player in 22 and under in the NBA. Would you agree with that or not?
Yeah, it's probably borderline. He's close.
Okay, I mean, top 10 you would agree with.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay, but I think they have the potential. I think that they're going to be continuing to contend even despite the fact that, I mean, they don't have their coach anymore. I don't know. Who's the coach now? I don't even know who the coach is. Who's the coach for the Oklahoma City now?
I should know, but did they pick a coach yet? They might be the one team that hasn't selected a coach yet, honestly.
Oh, here, we're going to find out right now. Oklahoma City promote assistant. Oh, Mark DiGiannino. I don't even know how to say this guy's name. The Oklahoma City promoted an assistant, Mark DiGiannault. I don't even know how to say that name. DiGiannault to coach.
Okay, we'll take it. All right,
this happened a week ago.
That's enough Oklahoma City talk.
Okay,
It's 1:15 in the morning.
Hey, listen. We got to talk about all the teams, Mike. Okay. Portland Trailblazers. The Portland Trailblazers. We got two left. Portland Trailblazers. Here's the thing. I think a lot of people are giving the Portland Trailblazers credit and that they've gotten better. I don't know that they've gotten that much better. Yes, they picked up Robert Covington, and yes, they got Enes Kanter back. But are they really better? They signed Carmelo Anthony to a one-year veteran minimum deal. You can't go wrong with that. I'm really surprised he didn't get something better than that from someone else. But whatever. Maybe he just went back to them because they were so low. They picked him up and they seemed to work well. I don't know that Portland's gotten that much better. I think they're better, but I don't think there's a lot of people that are lauding how great Portland is now. Are they really that much better, Mike? I don't think so.
See, I kind of think they are because
oh man, and I want to be clear here. I've been a bigger Portland believer than you have.
You've been a bigger Portland believer than I have for sure. I think that if I look at the totality of what they did, and so here's my case for them being significantly better. So two seasons ago, they're in the Western Conference Finals. Now I know there was some funky stuff that went on, and they kind of had their path cleared for them, but still, they were in the Western Conference Finals. We know what Dame is. We know what CJ is. Those two guys are totally dynamic offensively, slightly weaker on the defensive end of the floor, so they need defensive protection out there from the rest of their players. So you have Zach Collins back, who, again, he's had a history of injuries, so I don't know if you can count on him to play a full season and make it all the way through a playoff run. But if he comes back healthy, clearly a good player to add to your rotation. They signed Harry Giles from Sacramento, who – a lot of people thought maybe that he was not given as much opportunity to play as they thought.
Mike, I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't know who Harry Giles was until you just said his name.
Harry Giles was like the number one player in his recruiting class as a junior, I believe. And then he tore his knee, ripped up his knee, and he never really got back to that same level. But he's a guy that a lot of people around the league, I think, think highly of him. That he could be a contributor.
I'm going to take your word for it.
They signed him for a minimum. I think he's making like $2.5 million. So they signed him for next to nothing. Rodney Hood coming back off his injury. Again, theoretical Rodney Hood. I've never been a huge fan of him. But He does bring something to the table.
Mike, you're a huge fan of Rodney Hood. Come on.
I'm not. I'm a huge fan of theoretical Rodney Hood. If you could ever get theoretical Rodney Hood, I'm in. They signed Derek Jones Jr. from the Heat. World beater, game changer, no. But another guy that has depth, that adds their depth, that can play defense, that can knock down some threes for you, which at that position on the wing, they really haven't had guys like that. Derek Jones Jr. is 6'6", long arms, can defend multiple positions. I think that's a good pickup. You already talked about Kanter. Nurkic back for a full season. He was great in the bubble. He's only probably going to continue to get better. And then you have the development of Gary Trent Jr. And then you have two guys that really didn't do a whole lot last year, but that are kind of intriguing young guys in Anfernee Simons and Nasir Little. Maybe those guys end up being some ammunition to make some trades later on in the season. I don't know. There's
a lot going on. I thought you were
going to
say they got better because Whiteside's leaving, but
He hasn't signed anywhere, so maybe who knows? Maybe they sign him to a minimum contract.
I don't think there's any way he's signing a minimum contract. Someone's going to pay him.
He's not going back to Portland. I don't think so.
No. All right.
Anyway, Portland's better. I think they move themselves up. They're clearly now. I think I pencil them in somewhere between the 3 and 6 seed if they stay healthy.
Okay. All right. And last but not least, Mike, we've reached the end. The Utah Jazz. Listen, they signed your boy contract extension, Jordan Clarkson. He loves to shoot.
$50 million for what, 4 years, 3 years?
I thought it was three years. I think it's crazy. But the bigger news is the huge Donovan Mitchell extension. That man, he got paid. And he deserves it. I mean, let's be honest. When you think back to the bubble, okay, yes, we think of the Lakers. And we think of the fantastic duels in the playoffs with Mitchell. I think he deserves it. Of all people to get the money, I'm happy for him. You know, what's crazy is he's only going to make $3.5 million this year, but then after this year, he's going to be making lots of money. So congrats to Donovan Mitchell for sure.
He stepped up and proved his worth. I think now it becomes a question of what do they do with Gobert moving forward. They signed Derek Favors, brought him back from New Orleans, back to Utah where he started his career. If Mike Conley, what you get out of him, if he has a healthy year and gets back to normal Mike Conley production, which who knows if he is.
I can't believe he's 33 years old. I feel like we just had this conversation, but
yeah,
I didn't realize he's that old, Mike.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he's been around. You know, you figure he came out the same draft as Greg Oden, and Greg Oden's been off the radar for a long time.
Since Durant he entered the league.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. Utah is interesting. I think they're going to continue to be a solid team. They're clearly still going to be a playoff team. Mitchell's only going to continue to get better. I think this team has to figure out long-term, what do you do with Gobert? And is he a guy who you can build around? Again, obviously they're building around Donovan Mitchell as their number one option, but Gobert has been a key part of their team, especially defensively. And who knows what's going to happen there going forward.
Do you know who on their team is making the most money, Mike, if you had to guess?
Well, I have the salaries in front of me.
Oh,
so,
nuts.
Conley's making the most money.
Yeah, and then Gobert's number two.
Yeah. So
and then Jordan Clarkson's number three. Oh, no, that's Bogdanovich is number three.
Bogdanovich is number three, yeah. I mean, again, they have a good team. They have a good team, but I don't think they have a title contending team the way it's put together.
No,
so.
I agree. All right, Mike, we've said it all. We probably missed some things, but I think, you know, as we continue each week, we're like 3 weeks away from making predictions on the season, which is crazy. And we're going to see some more people are going to sign with other teams and we'll have some reactions to that. But I mean, wow, what a crazy, crazy off season this has been and a short off season. And I'm really, really excited. I can't wait to watch the Cavs play, as terrible as they may be. I'm excited to watch them play again and know that I'm going to be able to tune in and watch and just see what the NBA season's all about this year and how weird it's going to be with, you know, if there's going to be fans at any point and, you know, they're going to have to get – fans are going to have a negative test in hand when they show up to the game. I can't wait to hear about all the craziness that that leads to. And just lots of craziness. That's all I'm really excited about.
Well, the season's coming very, very quickly. I don't think we could have done any more of an exhaustive free agency episode than we did tonight. And it's
been
a fun...
Don't challenge Justin, because he might go out there and do an exhaustive search and cover people that we didn't talk about, Mike.
Well, I'm sure there's people that we didn't talk about, and we could start reading off that list if you want to, but I don't think we should do that tonight.
No, it's 118.
It is. At any rate, that was a lot of fun to go through, and it's been a lot of fun to kind of watch the way that free agency has unfolded, the way the draft unfolded. Just like you, I'm excited about getting a chance to see our hometown Cavs play. And like I said right off the beginning, I can't believe it feels like the Lakers just won the title like 2 days ago, and we're going to be watching games here coming up very, very soon. So should be an exciting NBA season. We appreciate everybody sticking with us. If you made it to the end of the episode, congratulations. Thanks for hanging with us for the entirety of our free agent.
If you made it to the end of the episode, I want you to send us a message on Twitter saying we listened to your whole episode and we thought it was fantastic or something along those lines. Please
do that.
There you
go. Yeah, give us a shout out on Twitter. Hey, listen to the entire free agency recap pod with Mike and Jason. So thanks to everybody out there for listening. We appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast presented by Head Start Basketball.